Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
Hello and a warm welcome to our Jung Architecture Talks podcast. My name is Katrina Varga and I greet you from the home office in Karlsruhe in South Germany.
Also a hearty welcome from my part. My name is Diane Slavik, and I'm speaking to you from Stuttgart, also in South Germany. As our guest, we are very happy to introduce and welcome Martin Murphy to this podcast session. By the way, the first in English. Hello, Martin. Thanks for your digital time and good to have you with us today.
Yeah, great to be here, ladies. Thank you for the invitation and looking forward to a technically free podcast with you and also looking forward to hearing your interesting questions.
As a form of introduction, we would like to introduce you shortly. You studied in London and graduated at the Canterbury College of Art and Design, followed by postgraduate studies at the Politecnica de Madrid. After that, your path took you directly to Germany in 1992. So you Brexited quite quick. How come?
Brexited. Yeah, that's a word we don't hear a lot in the present climate, for obvious reasons. I probably got a little bit further back. I remember very early on in my life, my mother said that I was born a foreigner. I think she meant that slightly with a little twinkle in her eye, because I was always very fascinated by foreign cultures and languages as a young boy. I had the benefits also of going to a boarding school where I came across at a very early age different nationalities and different languages, and I just found it very fascinating and intriguing. So I'm actually not surprised that I have spent the last 27 years in a foreign country, which I don't consider to be a foreign country. I consider it to be my chosen home. And for various reasons, I've stayed here and been very happy here. But just to come back briefly to the Brexit situation, I would like to say a word about that. When I arrived here in 1992, 27th of September, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, platform 8, Dusseldorf. Yeah, we got that together. I was picked up by a friend of mine, Michael, who was also basically in Dusseldorf for, I think, planned 6 months. I was only planning to come for a weekend just to visit him. And there was obviously the drought of work in London, where we just all finished our studies and looking for jobs, etc. So I was basically coming over to Germany, where I'd never been before, just to visit an old friend. He studied on an Erasmus program in Dusseldorf. So what, as always, kind of happens in these situations, as architects do, we had a weekend where there was a competition to be handed in on the following Monday. So that basically meant I ended up sort of rolling my sleeves up and doing the model that was in Inghofen's office at that time. I stayed a year and a half, which was basically a very, very long weekend. And we have a running joke in our family where I arrived in Dusseldorf with a rucksack. The rucksack is now in northern Germany in the cellar. My wife wanted to throw it out, but I was very, very emotionally attached to this rucksack because it marked the departure from 1992 to the present day, from 1992. From England. Coincidence plays a huge role in life, of course, but I think fate opened the doors and I basically walked through them. But I didn't know that at the time, but I'm very happy that I did make this this decision. I think, just very briefly, as a man who carries an English passport, I didn't feel very comfortable or very happy in July 2016 when United Kingdom chose to leave the European Union. England, UK being one of the founding fathers of Europe and one of the oldest and successful democracies on the planet, to leave the ship, the European ship, really saddened me enormously, still does today. But I think we as a European entity are still strong together, although it's been tested extremely in the corona crisis. I don't know really what England or the UK believe they're promising themselves. But it did make me do one thing, which I never thought I would do, and that's get a German passport. I didn't really need to have a German passport because I felt European and I felt at home here. I was more concerned actually what would happen to me and my working status if I didn't have one. So now after 25 years, I not only am very proud to call myself a Brit, still very proud to call myself a Brit, but I'm also very proud to call myself, on paper at least, German.
I can imagine.
1995, you started working for Alsop and Sturmer Architects in Hamburg before you became a partner in 2004 in the renamed studio Sturmer Murphy & Partners. Your team today counts around 40 people, four partners, including yourself, and three associate partners. Please give us a little background history to your personal development in architecture and design.
Jana, I've always enjoyed the value of working in partnerships and teams. I flourish in working with different personalities. I love dialogue. I couldn't imagine being a one-man office. I just couldn't exist in that kind of parameter. I love talking to our teams. I love talking to all different sort of sections in our office. So that's, you know, a foundation of the way I've always thought. Coming from a large family, people around me have always motivated me, and I've tried to motivate people in turn. What we're certainly not is a diva studio. I never really found that idea appealing, that there's only one person who has the ideas. In a reality, that is not the case out there either. Even though there are one name offices, there's a huge amount of people in the back rooms doing a lot of work to make these projects into first place competition projects or just well-built projects. So I'm not a fan of that statement. Yeah, it's true. 95 started with Alsop and Sturmer. Will Alsop sadly departed from us last year. An absolute maverick of a personality, of an architect, half artist. A very quiet man, a very well thought out man in what he said and how he said his sentences. Combined with a very, if you will, also colourful and emotional personality with Jan Sturmer. And I just enjoyed the early years sort of between the two of them, listening to the way they bounced off sentences and the way they also encouraged myself and other people in the office to get involved in the discussions. So it was a very, it was a period full of emotion, full of highs and lows, winning competitions, losing competitions. But the initial years were, yeah, as in the 90s or the 80s in working in practices in London, we basically just filled our time doing one competition after the next. We had very little sleep, actually. One of those classic kind of statements that we bring as architects from my generation anyway is all-nighters. And the all-nighters were filled with stacks of coffee and cigarettes and junk food, if you will. But there was that great energy to actually do a great piece of work. It's interesting. I showed a new person, a new team member around the office the other day, and we have a wonderful old warehouse type building here in Hamburg, the center of Hamburg, and there's huge great big floor to ceiling spaces. And in one of these spaces, we used to have an old bunk bed. And I looked up to the space where the bunk bed doesn't exist anymore. And I said, well, you know, that's where we used to sleep when we did competitions. And the young girl had a white face on her because she thought I was going to ask her to do all-nighters. They don't do that anymore. We don't do that anymore. I think it's interesting. We've also made a journey. We've learned also from a lot of young people. You can still do great architecture if you dedicate your time constructively, productively during the day. So I think those days have actually changed. But it's been a process. It's been a process of starting off with different partners. It's been a process of where we are today. Jan is still active in his late 70s. We have new partners in the office, and we have a very energetic and colorful bunch of people who are energized with one aim, and that is our aim, to produce good architecture.
And since March 16th, 2020, things have changed very rapidly and suddenly in the world of architecture and design. One initial challenge was certainly to quick replan the structure of your studio and ways of working. How does that succeed with a team of approximately 40 people, usually sharing, as you said, open, communicative ways of working?
Yeah, the open plan situation does play a big role in our office structure here. We certainly have some areas where smaller rooms are available, but our three big spaces are open plan. I think it basically means we have to be more considerate. We have to be careful. And above all, as all the political figures are saying, we have to be very hygienic. The essence is people want to come into the office if at all possible. So we've tried to make it possible in that the spaces are big enough between each other. Where we used to have people sitting next to each other, there's always a space in between. We have a third of the office in, and two-thirds of the office are working from home. So there is more space here in the office at the moment. I do know from the people who are at home, primarily the parents looking after their children because of the schools and kindergartens being closed, that they are also eager to get back to seeing their colleagues and enjoying the working environment that we try together to provide.
So, Martin, what would you say? How has architecture and design changed already in this rather short period of time with Corona for you and your team? And are there any profits, and what are the issues?
I think architecture and design wouldn't change. I really don't think realistically in such a short period of time, almost regardless. I would say there are certain advantages and disadvantages that we experience or have experienced. I think one of the advantages, of course, is what I notice very, very much. Less travel. I don't think I've been in one space for such a long time in my life as in the last 5 weeks. It really is quite remarkable, and it focuses your concentration. So that is definitely an advantage. And about focusing concentration, I notice also in the plethora of video conferences and Zoom meetings and WhatsApp and what have you, I find people are far more succinct. They put the sentences quicker together, they get to the point, and the next person gets on. That does not happen in a meeting. So it's definitely an advantage in some respects. And yes, the discussion has been happening that potentially, you know, a more efficient use of space is a window in the future. But they are elements that are, you know, a lot to do with also technology. And, you know, we are humans. And I, for one, I'm certainly missing the human touch. I'm certainly missing the one-to-one dialogue. I am getting a little bored after 5 weeks of talking to a television, to be honest with you. It is a workaround, and it functions, and thank God that it does. We never used this video suite. You can't see me, but I can see you two, of course. But this video suite, we never really used that much previous to Corona. It was more of a novelty. These rooms are booked literally. We have three. Are booked literally 2/3 of the day. With meetings, I have the impression people are talking to each other more than they did beforehand. There are advantages and disadvantages, but I would definitely say that I miss the one-to-one. What I think will happen in the future is that we'll certainly be using these devices for 50% of the time, when in fact we would be flying a team of two or three people down to Munich. So those trips are going to be reduced in the future. So I think there are definitely things that we've learned. A word also for, you know, the huge disadvantages, I must really say, is that the mothers and fathers out there that are trying to do their job, but they have small children around them, maybe in a confined space, you know, with no balcony. I think that must be absolutely horrific. It doesn't matter what nationality, everyone has this problem. Looking at the images in Spain, where it was complete lockdown, and also in Italy. So I think it's been quite horrific. But to get back to your original point, Diana, I don't think architecture and design has necessarily changed. I think it's our human behavior has changed.
This situation surely also regards your clients. Did you already realize a difference in the requirements from your clients?
Not really. No, not. I wouldn't say requirements. I noticed by one or two clients, and that's just because they're my opposite number, if you will. Same with a lot of other people. A lot of people are more anxious at the moment. The ice is quite thin. They're nervous. They're concerned about the future because they don't know, you know, how long this situation is going to last. So regardless what happened yesterday, a relaxation of the corona rules and regulations here in Germany, I think that was greeted today with the lovely weather we have today, with a lot more people walking around. I think people are still being very, very careful. And I think that has an effect on the human psyche. Our clients, I just think they're trying like everybody else, you know, else to get through the day. But I think in our branch of work, we can certainly count ourselves remarkably fortunate. I feel privileged, and our team as well here, that we are able to work. You know, you've got hotels, you've got retail shops. Up until a week ago, they were all closed. The poor restaurants are still going through a very hard time. And there's going to be a lot of people that will fall down through this process. So I think it's a luxury question, if you know what I mean. We're just happy to work at all.
The focal point and home of Stürmer Murphy & Partners is the studio full of character in the very well-known part of Hamburg called Fleetinsel, where a combination of art galleries, ateliers, the restaurants create a very positive and vibrant atmosphere. In your opinion, how will we create a sustained architectural quality for future communities with Corona?
I rather hope that we actually come to a solution where we will be living with a disease and we know how to combat the disease, as opposed to considering this question for me is in terms of how we change our structures and our communities and our town planning, for example. I hope to God that it doesn't go that far. I hope and pray that we really have in a short period of time, they say 8 months, 12 months of vaccine, so people can actually become relaxed again on the streets and in their workspace. I hope that we do not have the challenge as architects to design spaces for Corona. I think it's a horrible thought. It may come, but the messages and the information that we're getting at the moment is that we're probably going to get some light at the end of the tunnel, and we can enjoy the beautiful existing structures of the European cities, the world cities, as they are, and hopefully not have to change them that much.
So are we experiencing a change of paradigms, or is Corona only an episode?
That's a good question, Katarina. God, oh God, oh God, how I wish. Corona will be a rather long episode. That's the sad answer to the question, in my opinion. We've always shown how little we learn from history. although my heart was so light when I saw the waters were getting clean in Venice, the swans were coming back, and those stupid and horrible big cruise line boats weren't cluttering up the canals. When you look at the pollution maps around China or Europe or India, the smog was clearing. It's all wonderful images. But you know what? Today, 8th of May, 75th anniversary of the end of the war, I was listening to the radio this morning. I don't really think I have to go into that in any more detail. Just look around what's happening in the world, you know, Syria, Iraq.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we'll learn a lot from Corona. I really do. I think it's the question of, has it been painful enough for enough world leaders to make some sensible decisions? We all knew before Corona came in what an issue the climate change issue is, and what blindness by some international governments this was always being greeted by, ignorance. And I think we're seeing some dramatic images around the world. I just hope to God that the political establishments open their eyes and ears and take this as a very, very serious call where we have to change our ways. So it's a long episode, and I hope we take some chapters into the future.
We all find ourselves in a kind of forced newborn digital world. Thinking about an architect's passion with building, how would you say is that compatible?
Oh, I think passion is independent. Passion is so strong that I see it completely independent. It's irrelevant of technology. It doesn't make it any easier, of course. But one of my favorite objects, which you can't see, is a pencil that I always carry around with me. And that's the easiest analog instrument that you can have. We have very few rules and regulation in our offices, but the most important thing is it's the way you have your good ideas and you present them is irrelevant. It could be through a paper model, it could be through a styrofoam model, or it could be through a good hand drawing or a very elegant 3D generated drawing. It's the quality of the idea, it's not the way the technology is used it. So I think passion is something deep, deep inside, and I don't build a bridge to technology in that respect. I see it as independent. And of course, if you don't possess that wonderful word, passion, then one is definitely in the wrong business. This business requires a huge amount of passion and conviction and love and joy for lived environments. So passion is something that I use a lot, Leidenschaft in Deutsch. And I speak about this word quite a lot to my people. And it fills a lot of our day.
Well, with all this passion and not being able to see each other as much as normally, will offices, for instance, only need half of the area because the other half of the staff are working from home?
This discussion I had recently with a colleague of mine, I'm absolutely a firm believer that the people would, majority of them anyway, would rather be here in the office than at home, having to deal with work and teaching their kids. I think people, again, the majority of people like to separate as clearly as they can the working and the living environments with their families. And I think there's a lot of sense in that as well. I don't necessarily think that spaces in that respect will change extremely. What I do believe will certainly change, and it might have an effect, is in the future, I believe our meetings with our staff, personnel meetings, this issue will certainly come up after the whole Corona episode is gone, or dissipated at least, whether they can have 1 or 2 days working from home. Well, that's never been the way or the culture we've worked. Architecture and just walking past tables or talking to each other in the kitchen or outside. It's always been a very informal generation of ideas sometimes. You know, we're not an insurance brokerage where it's very clear, you know, what programs you do. Our ideas are spontaneous and they can happen anywhere. But normally you use other people with you to create dialogue and generate ideas. So I think it's important that we have that. but at the same time, it has been shown that teams can work very efficiently working from home. So that's a learning lesson. That's not something that, to be honest with you, I would have believed. But now we're being forced to acknowledge this. And I think other cultures and societies have been doing this in the past. A lot of Scandinavian countries, for example, have been doing this in the past. So I think we can certainly learn from this without a shadow of a doubt.
Thanks so much for all that great input. I'm sure we can say that you have achieved a lot already, but is this still a project to fulfill your architect's dreams? So something very personal?
Firstly, I think architecture is something for me very personal, always has been, always will be. I simply have one dream, if you will, and that is the ambition to always make the next project a good project. The ambition and the aim to produce good architecture is what we do. I was asked recently, you know, what's your main ambition as an architect? What you've always wanted to do, you know? And I said, well, actually, just produce good buildings. That sounds easy, but it really isn't. Producing good buildings is actually a very complex process. It's a wonderfully complex process. I live for it. So I wouldn't say a particular project, typology of project. I would put it down to the idea and the belief of continuing to produce good architecture. And a footnote to that, I or my partners do not do it on our own. You have to have a great team of conviction behind you in the form of your team members. That is something we thankfully do have.
We appreciate your opinion on all this and input a lot. Are there any final thoughts you would like to share with our listeners around the world?
It's a strange time at the moment, Catherine. It's a strange time where we're all sort of living, and the communication is strained as well sometimes. But I think it is actually rather touching to see the way I think people are very civil to one another when you walk around the streetscape and here in Hamburg. So I think there's a huge amount of consideration, more consideration, in fact, although they're trying to probably avoid each other, but more consideration for your fellow human being, and I think that's lovely to see. That's made me actually in these sometimes dark times very very happy. But I think what we have to do in the future is to remain considerate and take care of ourselves. Not just our families and our friends and our loved ones, but also, the man on the street. So I think that's one message I'd certainly like to say as an end. Yeah.
Very true. I'm with you on that one. Well, thanks a lot, Martin, for sharing your time with us.
It was such a great pleasure talking and listening to you.
Well, I'm just very happy that the viewers outside didn't see that I'm wearing my pajamas, which is lovely. These are the pajamas I only wear on Fridays, by the way, in the office.
That's why we chose
they
Friday.
They are very, very comfortable. It's something that I can recommend to everybody out there. Get yourself a nice pair of silky pajamas. Lovely.
Thanks a lot to our listeners as well. If you enjoyed the podcast, we are very happy to be recommended.
Stay healthy, and we're looking forward to our next session of Jung Architecture Talks, the Architecture Podcast. Please join us, and we hope you enjoyed it. All the best for you, and see you, hear you next time.